When you were working there, okay, so you had your different friends, you'd ride down together, and was this like a big, what was the area that you worked in like, I mean, physically, what was the environment like?
It was a big place, like a big hangar,
uh-huh.
Not big building, uh-huh. Big, and like we were upstairs, and oh, to walk the length of it was like a good city block,
mm-hmm.
In these sections, all on either side of this walkway down the middle.
Mm-hmm. Was it lighting and heating?
Yeah, it was comfortable, uh-huh. As far as I remember. I don't remember being uncomfortable.
Uh-huh. Did they ever give you any stuff around safety working in the plant?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. We had, that's tied up to hair.
Uh-huh. Stuff like that.
Uh-huh. And, no, I guess it was just the hair mostly because the drill press, you know, could get in it or,
mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the women, they had these snuds and then with a bill and it covered all their hair, but Jamie and I said, no, we didn't want that.
Uh-huh.
No. We thought that was horrible. We wasn't going to do it. I think one time they made us tie our hair up, but we tied in a cute little bow,
uh-huh.
Stick out.
Yeah. So yeah, you said do something a little fancy,
a little different. Uh huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They it seems to me like we got things on safety.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to buy your own tools?
We were supposed to buy our own tools. Now, there were certain tools that we could check out from the tool bin and files, because I only bought, what were they called? And they were expensive, too. They had a right and a left hand that you cut. I think Johnny May got the left and I got the right. Because when they fired me that day, I was going out swinging it. So they let me go first, and they kept the girl there. They thought I was going to start fighting again. So, but it was to cut the metal.
Mm-hmm, like trimmers?
Yeah. And we were supposed, I don't know what we were supposed to buy, but we never bought anything. We just bought that one piece.
Uh-huh.
And
then
all.
Everything else you checked out from like a tool
uh-huh,
printer or something?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Did, was there a sense, I know I've read some things in the plant that they seem to have a lot of stuff going on about the war and the war effort. Did any of that affect you down where you were working, or was it just a job to get done?
Seems to me like I took out bonds.
Uh-huh.
We were required to take out bonds. I just remembered that.
Yeah.
And I think I took the least amount.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I got a bond about every 2 or 3 months.
Uh-huh. So.
And I cash it in as soon as it was ready.
Uh-huh.
But that was the only thing I think that they required us as far as the war effort,
mm-hmm.
Unless I can think of something else. I don't think so.
I've also seen that there were some noontime shows sometimes, or lunchtime shows. Did you ever see any of those?
No.
And I just, they may have only been for another show. But, so as far as extras and things, it was, for you, it was pretty much you got to the plant and did your...
Did my job and went home.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were working at this job, I know that... later, some of the black newspapers, like the California Eagle or the Los Angeles Sentinel, had said
mm-hmm.
some things about discrimination or something in North America. Were you aware of any things like that, or any organizing?
I think black not community? Not at that time.
Uh-huh.
If it was, I was unaware of it.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I never got into those things, because. There didn't seem to be anything that I could put my finger on,
mm-hmm.
You know, that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if it had been, I would have.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
as far as I know, I could have stayed at North American for a long time. I had been there 8 months, and my work must have been satisfactory. I had had no negative reports or anything, and except for this incident of fighting, I could have stayed there until I got ready to leave.
Did you, was your plan to keep working even after the war now?
At the time, that was just at the beginning of the war, and no one knew when it would end. And so I had to work to support my baby, you know. And so I was just more or less, you know, working until I could find a husband. Then I really didn't intend to work all my life. I really meant to, you know, call a halt somewhere along there.
So, that was, you really didn't have plans?
No, other than wanting to move away from home.
How did you feel about the whole thing of working with your hands and working with mechanical things?
Well, I can't say that I enjoyed that too much. I particularly didn't like filing. You see my nails. They've always been like this. I have to cut them off. So, and I always wore red nail polish.
So you like long
course,
nails?
Yeah, so of course I did not appreciate filing something, you know, ruining my nails. So I wasn't too particular about it, but at the time, I can't say that I was too dissatisfied because it was a job. And like I said, I was young and able to handle the job. And I don't think I had any plans as far as work was concerned. To me, of course, there was no, the end of the war was not in sight, and no one knew how long it was going to last. So it just looked like it was prosperity. My father had a good job, and, you know, we were doing all right.
Did you, were you still active in your church at that time?
No. When I got 18, and I stopped going.
Was that a source of any tension in your family? Did anybody?
Well, after I got pregnant, my mother didn't care if I did go to church because it was too embarrassing for her.
So you got in this fight with the woman on the job and ended up leaving.
Yeah.
Like you or not. How did you feel about being fired for that? Did you?
Oh, I didn't care. Everybody said I had whipped her, and so I felt good. Felt like I had done something. You know, I was a hero.
Yeah. Were you worried about what was going to happen to your plans of getting your own place or anything?
No, because my mother wasn't going to let me get my own place, so that was it.
Were you were saving part of what you were making, though, at this time?
It wasn't much, but, you know, I was spending, and because I bought my son some cute, they used to have these little handmade rompers made in the Philippines. They were expensive. Well, he had gugobs of them. I had gugobs of shoes. And, you know, I spent a lot of money. It wasn't that I saved a lot, but I always have been the kind, if you make a dime, save a nickel, you know. So I would save some, but, he was distressed. When I worked at LAPD, I had gotten him an outfit from Bullock's. I shopped at Bullock's, and then they used to have these little kid shops on Broadway there, and go down there and buy those cute little things. And, oh, the girls just wanted to eat him up one day down at the police department. He had on this kind of beige coat with a little design in it. And then, I don't know what shade of brown. It wasn't a brown. But it just matched the coat and the short pants. He always wore short pants and his little white shoes and everything. And, oh, they thought he was a doll. You know, I used to get, he had such little delicate features by him being a preemie baby. He had little delicate features and everything, and so everybody thought he was a girl even when he wore pants. And of course, my mother said, don't cut his hair till he was 2 years old. So, you know, his hair wasn't real long, but it was pretty, and you know, and I'd braid it up, and everybody said, oh, isn't she cute? It's a boy.
What did you do after you got fired in North America?
Well, mother always dictated what I should do. She says, well, stay home and rest. I'm tired of keeping the baby. And that must have been June or July, something like that. I think I stayed home for a couple of months. Well, there was no welfare. So I really didn't have, any money or anything. She just supported me like I was a child in school. Mm-hmm. And then finally she says, well, find you a job. So that's when I went to work for a county civil service.
And when was that about?
That was in September 1943.
Uh-huh.
I'll never forget that.
How did you hear about that job?
I heard about it some way. I knew a lot of people, and you know, we talk all the time, and somebody said, well, they were given a quickie exam, and I had learned to type in school, mm-hmm. and they said, all you need to do is take this little quickie exam, more or less an aptitude test, and type at least, I think you had to type 50 words a minute. No, you didn't have to type that much. That's what I typed when I took the typing test, 50 words a minute. And so they hired me on at the hospital.
So which hospital was that?
General Hospital, the one they call USC now.
Uh-huh.
And that was September of 43.
How long did you work there?
Let's see. I got into it with the supervisor there because they, after about a year and a half, a new supervisor came on and she made me permanent because I was taking tests and I was passing them and everything, you know, and I passed the test for being permanent, so she made me permanent. And I think I left there about September, maybe October. I had taken the exam for the city.
What,
just any time. This is in 46.
Uh-huh. So you stayed there through?
Uh-huh. 43, 44, 45, and then in 46, one day, I was taking piano lessons, and she had changed my hours, and I wanted to come in early that Tuesday so I could keep my same lesson. Mm-hmm. And I did it one Tuesday. When I came in the second Tuesday, oh, she jumps all down my throat and everything. So I went to my desk, and I typed up a resignation that was effective immediately. Mm-hmm. But then I went to work over at the Civil Service Commission. This was at the hospital. I went downtown. Mm-hmm. And I worked there for a couple of months, and then they called me to the police department for the city. And so I was hired there in December of 46.
So really, after you worked in North America, did you
I never went back.
Kind of factory?
I never did. Never did. The only thing that came close to factory work was when I operated a graphitite machine.
Mm-hmm. So, through the time in North America, that was like about 8 months, you said.
Yeah.
Did you stay on day shift that whole time?
The whole time.
Uh-huh. And so in terms of like arranging your life around the day shift, how many days a week was it?
Seems to me like it was 5 days a week, because it seemed like I was off on Saturday and Sunday.
So you had your weekends?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And so you'd come home when, around 5 or so?
Something like that. I don't remember what time we had to be there, and I don't remember what time we got off.
But sometime in, say, the early afternoon or evening?
Yeah, because I always remember getting home before dark. Mm-hmm. Even through the winter months, I was always home before dark.
Uh-huh. And you came home from there, and then your son was still... just toddler.
Let's see, what year was that? That was like in 42. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, he was just a toddler then.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as like a social life, what did you do to meet people and?
Oh, I had a lot of friends, and I'd sneak out on the weekends. Nobody ever allowed me to go out, so most of the time I was sneaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like out here in Long Beach, they had a base there, Sailors, and I remember we used to go to dances out there. They had a real beautiful ballroom.
Uh-huh.
And I'll never forget, I was dancing, and this guy saw me. I could really dance, you know, knew all the latest steps and everything. And this guy was one of these dancers, you know, that where you pirouette around, and, you know, and I had to keep my foot close to him to keep my balance. We danced. Everybody backed off and watched us, you know. So I really had a lot of fun socially, even though I'd sneak off, you know. Sometimes I'd get permission. Once in a while, they'd allow me.
Was this like a USO or something, or just on the base?
It was just on the base,
mm-hmm.
And we went out there one time, and we'd meet guys, and then, you know, then we'd go out by ourselves. I had two girlfriends that were married to, well, they didn't get married till later on, but the three of us would go out,
mm-hmm.
And we'd go to the nightclubs, you know,
mm-hmm.
And, of course, seeing three ladies there, you know, somebody always came up to the table. Well, we were pretty good judges, you know. We could judge when the guys were nice. And really, a lot of people criticize the soldiers, but we met a lot of nice sailors and soldiers. Nice ones that we stayed friends with for a long time. And, I mean, it wasn't the sexual bit either, you know, because... my mother always would tell my sister, Jesse just goes with every Tom, Dick, and Harry, but that wasn't so.
Yeah.
You know, I was very, to me, sex has to have a mean. I never have been able to, you know, just go to bed just for the sake of going to bed. Because,
mm-hmm.
Very good friend. I think, it was sometime later this friend had gotten married, but he never forgot me. You know, because when all the others were going to motels and everything, we'd go to a motel and talk.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, during that time, you were meeting a lot of people there. Were the men, say, on the job at North American ever flirting around with the women there?
No, I never did have any dealings with men on the job.
Uh-huh.
Even to this day, I kind of shy away from... men on the job.
Mm-hmm.
All my men friends were outside the job.
Uh-huh. So these are mainly like soldiers and servicemen you're meeting?
That was all you could meet.
Everybody,
you know.
Was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you worry at all, say, during the war years about, say, an invasion or anything like that?
Mm-hmm.
What was it like to live in this area during that time?
Well, I was living... I think this was after I left North America, and they said that they were having ships and things to defend the harbor out at Long Beach or something. And then, you know, we had to, it was a time when they had to have the blackout.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me like for a while there, I was kind of nervous. And then sometimes it sounded like they were shooting guns, and I was kind of afraid then that we were gonna, you know, they were gonna come over and bomb us.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a little apprehension there,
mm-hmm.
for a while.
Yeah, some people. Was that sort of in the atmosphere generally? Or?
I think so, because of course then he didn't talk about it too much, and we were so gay and having fun till. You know, it was just like at nights when I would be at home and we'd sleep and we could hear the noises, and you would get to wondering, you know, whether they were going to invade or not.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that during the war, when the Japanese were evacuated,
uh-huh.
from the little Tokyo area,
uh-huh.
in L.A., that it was a lot of the people who were black who had migrated moved into... the homes there and things, and it was called Bronzeville. I was wondering if you'd ever heard anything
about that
during the war.
No, I never heard of that.
Had you ever heard of a group called the Negro Victory Committee? like the People's Independent Church of Christ?
I never had to. We used to go to Independent Church. It was up there on 18th, right off of Washington and Central.
Uh-huh.
I used to go there quite a bit, not for services. It would be for something like either our choir was going to sing or some kind of program. They were always giving something.
Mm-hmm.
And I participated, but I never did really belong to any groups or anything up there.
Uh-huh. Were you in any clubs at all during the war years, or did you have time for that?
Let's see. No, I belonged to a lot of clubs when we were in high school, but it seems like at that time, no, it was just like work and have a good time.
Mm-hmm. So you remember when you were dating the servicemen and those people,
mm-hmm.
Were you looking for husband material at that
right.
time?
Right. Right. Yeah, I had promised two guys when they went overseas I was going to marry them, and I had to be careful that I didn't put one letter, you know, in the wrong letter in the wrong envelope, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I was supposed to marry both. Both of them were from Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
And both of them went home, and one I didn't hear from after he went home. I knew he was on Harold Wainwright. I'll never forget, tall guy, you know, and I really liked him. And we decided to marry just before he was going overseas. And he couldn't get time off to come and we get married. Same way with Bob Crowder. Oh, I really like Bob Crowder. When he went to Tennessee, he went home first. And he would call and call and we'd talk and we'd talk, you know. And any day he was going to come and we were going to get married, you know. And the next thing I know, his sister was calling. He got some girl pregnant, and so he was going to marry her. So that was it. I did worry, though, that they were going to kill off all the men, and I wasn't going to have anybody to marry.
Yeah. Well, I think we've covered the war years pretty well. I mean, I want to talk more maybe in our third interview about your other job since it carries over more into the published war years. But, are there things that you can think of that I haven't asked you about that would be important to mention?
Oh, let me see. I can't think of anything, you know, during working in North America and so forth. It was just, let's see, when did the war end? I think by the time it ended when?
45.
Oh. I was thinking that it ended in 45. Well, it ended, because I was coming home from work from the hospital when I had heard that the war had ended. That was before I went to work at the police department.
Mm-hmm.
And I had heard, I remember I was working at the hospital when Franklin Roosevelt died.
Mm-hmm.
Remember I had gone to work that morning and it had come on the radio or something, the news, that he had died.
Mm-hmm.
And like the rest of the war years, I was at the hospital.
Mm-hmm. So you remember the day that, like VJ Day or?
Yeah, I was coming home on the streetcar and it was headlines, you know, that the war was ended.
Mm-hmm.
And by that time, my people had bought a place, had bought a house. And I was still there.
And where, during like the time you lived in North America, where did they live in Boston?
Well, we lived on 56th Street between Avalon and someplace. It was a cute little house.
Uh-huh.
My mother had moved there right after the baby was born.
Uh-huh.
And it was a cute little house. And as a matter of fact, she would have bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the woman, I think it was some Italian people that owned it, and they said that when they sold it, they would give my mother first choice. Because my father had been making pretty good money. She was a thrifty woman and saved money. And so she would have, but they didn't even tell my mother that they were going to sell it.
Mm. So they said that and it didn't come through?
And didn't come through. And that's when she had to find a place.
Uh-huh.
And I was still working at the hospital.
Uh-huh. Did your mother make a lot of the decisions around finances and stuff like that?
All of the decisions.
Uh-huh. So she decided where you were going to live and everything. And so then, by the end of the war, you just moved, like, close to the time when the war ended, or?
Let's see, before the war ended, because, see, the woman had sold the place and didn't let my mother know, so we had to move. So these people that my father had worked for when he first came here, Vogel, you know, I told you about the Jewish people.
Uh-huh.
Well, he had a house, and he sold that to my mother and father. So that when the war ended, they had moved into the house. But see, she had been able to say, of course, she used my savings, too. You know, dummy me, I let her have it. And how many times did they put me out, you know? Not literally put me out, but ask me to leave, you know?
Yeah.
And I had to throw it up to them, my money's in this house, too, you know?
Uh-huh.
But things got so bad, you know, until I talked back and, you know, they would just make me mad. Wouldn't let me lead my own life, you know?
How old were you before you finally were able to move away from me?
26.
Uh-huh. So you still had, throughout the war years, you were pretty much stuck in the house.
I was. And then, you know, we were taught disobedience, you know, and so I hated to go against my mother. If I hadn't cared, I would have married this guy, Ferguson. I would have married him and gone back to Idaho, but mother couldn't hear it. And with me taking my child, you know, her first grandchild, you know. So, and that was another source of friction, too, because she didn't want to be called grandma. So he called me Jessie, and he called her mother. And if I tried to correct him or discipline, don't pay any attention to that, Jessie. You know, so consequently, I had no control over my child.
What's your son's name?
Richard.
Richard. So when Richard was growing up, was there any sort of confusion then around who was his mother, or was he knew you were his mother, but
he
called
knew
her?
I was the mother.
Uh-huh.
But then he called her mother because that's the way she taught
it. So it was just the name that she used.
Mm-hmm. And then when he got ready to go to school, then they said, he can't be going to school calling me Jessie. So then they said, you better teach him to call you mother. And I says, well, you taught him to call me Jessie. Now you teach him to call me mother.
Yeah.
I was really indignant about it.
Well, this is a stopping place.